Well, I'm glad that you're here today, and I'm glad to be here. I see that we have some folks visiting with us, and we want you to know that you are our special welcome guest. If you're visiting family, then we hope that you have a really, really good visit, safe trip, wherever you came from. And if you're when you return, hope that we pray for you a safe trip. If you're from this area, we hope that you're looking us over really good, because we are a close-knit Christian family, and we would certainly love to have you as a part of God's family here. I've got quite a snoot full of this pollen this last week, and so I'm hoping to make it through the lessons today. A little bit struggling this morning. Did you read about the 80-year-old woman who was arrested for shoplifting in Cincinnati? She went before the judge, and the judge asked her, "What did you steal?" And she said, "A can of peaches." And he said, "Well, why did you steal a can of peaches?" And she said, "Because I wanted them." And the judge said, "Well, how many peaches were in the can?" She said, "Six." He said, "Then I'm going to give you 6 days in jail." And before he could finish his sentencing, her husband, the old man, raised his hand, and he said, "Judge, may I say something?" And he said, "What is it?" He said, "She also stole a can of peas." You have a different relationship with your wife as time goes on. Luke chapter 7, verse 36 through 50, read just a few moments ago. I never get tired of this story. I don't know why. This story just keeps pulling me back. I've preached at least one sermon from this already, maybe two in the short time that I've been here. But I just keep getting more and more and more lessons from this. Every time I read it, there's just something that just really reaches out and grabs me. And this past, shortly before we moved here, in fact, just a matter of weeks before Janice and I moved here, our daughter and son-in-law, the ones who recently returned from Brazil as missionaries, contacted us with a special request. They're attending the A&M church, College Station. And you know that church has a very strong mission program, and they are now in the throes of sending out a mission team that is homegrown. I mean, it's from that particular congregation. People that grew up in that congregation were trained there, and they're sending them out as a group. And they ask our daughter and son-in-law to help prepare this team for what they were going to encounter when they get on the field. And one of the classes that they had was specifically for the parents of those young people that are going out. And they asked them to address their concerns about sending their child into the mission field. And so Leslie and Kyle, our daughter and son-in-law, contacted us and asked us, Janice and I, if we would each write a letter telling them some things that helped us cope with our children going to Brazil for 5 years. So we agreed, and we each sat down and we wrote a letter, spent some time doing that. And then when we got through and we agreed when we started, let's don't talk about it. Let you write your letter, I'll write my letter, and then we'll sit down and talk about it. And we compared letters after we had finished. And it was really interesting to see how similar our letters were. We both started out talking something about how our lives were going pretty much the way that we had them planned at that point in our life. Our oldest daughter and her husband had both graduated from Harding, and they were living just over an hour away. Our second daughter and her husband both graduated from Harding, and they were right there in El Dorado, Arkansas with us, just close by with, at that particular moment, two grandchildren with them, three with the others. But before they left to go to Brazil, there was another child born, and so they took a little babe in arms to Brazil with them. Our two youngest daughters had both at that time were attending Harding, one about to graduate and one about a year and a half away. And so they weren't but about 3 hours away from where we were. So things were going pretty well according to our plan. With our children and our lives, we were pretty happy about everything. And one day, Kyle and Leslie came to our home and they said, Mom, Dad, we have something to tell you. Brazil. I don't remember a lot about the conversation, but I do remember Brazil. 5-year commitment. I remember that. Grandchildren going with us. I tried to argue them out of that. I said, you're old enough to know what you're doing, but leave those kids here with us. They don't have a choice about this. And my mind goes back to some times in my life when I've either said or had someone say to me, I have something to tell you. And it occurs to me that quite often those particular words are a prelude to a life-changing event. When you hear the words, I have something to tell you, then I have a little piece of advice for you. You might want to sit down. Because it's probably going to rock your world, whatever it is. Whenever somebody close to you says, I have something to tell you, just go and find the nearest seat and sit down. Because your world is about to be rocked. Open your Bibles, if you will, to Luke chapter 7. And let me tell you what's about to happen here. Jesus is about to rock your world about who is going to be in heaven. The setting is in verse 36 through 38. One of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, so he went to the Pharisee's house, reclined at the table, and there are probably lots of things that happened in the conversation at that particular setting. But there's one thing that Luke wants to bring out, and he just cuts right to the chase. He gets him there at dinner, reclining. When a woman who lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume, and as she stood behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair and fervently kept on kissing them and pouring perfume on them. This is one of three incidences that Luke records that Jesus went to a Pharisee's house. This is the first one. There are two others that he'll record, each one of them teaching a number of lessons. But as I think about this scene here, about going to someone's house, maybe someone that most of us would feel a little bit of a need. Maybe we want to make a good impression when you go to somebody's house the first time on both sides of this deal, the Pharisee as well as Jesus. And this woman comes, and I can hardly imagine what it would have been like. And you think about them reclined at the table. They were all sitting at an angle. They didn't have tables and chairs. They didn't use them like we did. I don't say they didn't have chairs, but they sit at an angle, prop themselves up on one elbow. They don't put one another's feet in the other one's face. They kind of put it away from the dining area, but they're all just kind of stacked around. And so Jesus' feet are laid out behind him here, and this woman comes into the house, and she stands, goes and positions herself right behind Jesus, and she starts crying. Now, I don't know about you, but I think most men don't know what to do with a woman crying. What do you do? And particularly if it's somebody you don't know. It's pretty awkward, to say the least, isn't it? And as things proceed, I'm sure it got pretty quiet. And the woman's tears are falling down on Jesus' feet, and obviously she bends down. And she is deliberately allowing her tears to fall on Jesus' feet. And he doesn't move them. I think I would have moved my feet. I'm sorry about that. But I think I might have. I would like to think I wouldn't have, but I think I would have. Because I can't think of anything that would be much more embarrassing in that situation than that happening. And I don't know about you, maybe I'm just peculiar from everybody else, but I'm a little bit sensitive about what happens, what somebody does to my feet. I went to a lady's house, a good friend's house, and she and her husband are what I kind of refer to as health food nuts. And they do a lot of things with health food, and she has this thing that she does about massaging somebody's feet, and she thinks she can tell you where you got something wrong in your body. And I'm not knocking it. Maybe she can. But she came over, and I was sitting there, and she came over and started taking my shoes off. And I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I'm going to rub your feet." And I said, "No, you're not." And she said, "Well, it'll feel good." I said, "I'm sure it would, but you're not going to rub my feet." And I don't know if I'm alone in that, but it's just really awkward to me. I don't know why it's so awkward. She could have rubbed my head and massaged my head. I probably wouldn't have said anything. She'd have come over and started massaging my shoulders and my head. I don't think I'd have said anything. But when she started taking my shoes off, I said, "No, you're not going to massage my feet." And she didn't. I wouldn't let her. I might today, you know, but I wouldn't then. Was Jesus embarrassed? No. He was not embarrassed. He didn't move his feet. What would have happened to that woman if he had been embarrassed? She'd have been humiliated, wouldn't she? I don't know if I've ever run that much risk in my life to do what that woman did. I don't like to be humiliated. I don't like people laughing at me. I don't like people making fun of me. I don't like being in a house where I'm not wanted. Was the host embarrassed? I think probably so. Verse 39, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he'd know who's touching him, what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner." What did he feel for this woman? You pull the words out. I would say disgust, wouldn't you? Certainly embarrassment that this was happening in his house, and all his friends were here and people were watching. What were they going to leave saying about him? What did he need to take control of this situation? He needed to do something about this. But I don't know what all was going on in his mind, except what Luke tells us here, that he decided Jesus couldn't be a prophet because if he were, he wouldn't let this woman do this. He'd know what kind of woman she was. The question that I want us to entertain this morning is, why did this Pharisee feel no sense of forgiveness for this woman? No compassion for this woman? And I would suggest to you that the reason that he didn't is because he felt no need for forgiveness himself. He didn't know much about forgiveness. Remember what John said in 1 John chapter 1, verse 9, if we keep on confessing our sins, he's faithful and he keeps on forgiving our sins and purifying us from all unrighteousness. This man was an upstanding, outstanding, moral, productive, respected member of society. And this woman was a plague on society. She was scum. And Jesus responded to Simon in verse 40 through 47. And here it comes. Are you ready? You better go sit down. He said, "Simon, I have something to tell you." Now, I would need to tell you that at the end of this lesson, there's going to be a test. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be one question. I'm going to tell you what the question is, and I want you to be formulating your answer to that question. And that is, what was it that Jesus had to tell Simon? When it's all over, he said, Simon, I got something to tell you. I want you to formulate in your mind exactly what was it that Jesus had to tell Simon. And he told him a story, and it's really a short, simple little story that's going to rock Simon's world about who's going to be in heaven. Because heaven's inhabitants are not going to be who Simon thinks they are. And they might not be who we think they are. He tells a simple little story here, beginning in verse 41. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed 500 denarii, the other 50. Neither one of them had the money to pay him back, so he canceled the debts of them both. And then he asked the first of two questions. The first question says, which one of them will love him the more of those two individuals? Now, before we answer that, and you know what the answer is, I don't think anybody in here, if you had been asked that question by surprise, caught by surprise, and told that little story, asked the question, I don't think anybody would have missed the answer to that. I think we know what the answer to that is. But what I want you to stop and think just a moment is that he skipped a step in here between telling this story and the answer. There is a step between forgiving a debt and loving the one who forgave you. And he skipped that step. He said, which one will be the most grateful to the moneylender? He didn't say it, did he? But that's got to be in there. That's the step that's missing here. Why did he skip it? Because it goes without saying. But surely you've noticed in life that when something goes without saying, if you don't say it, it goes. Really. There are some things that you think are self-evident truths that if you don't teach them to your children, it won't be a self-evident truth. You better say it. If our lives are not based on gratitude, then they're based on pride. There was no pressure, as far as I know, on this woman to do this. She just heard that Jesus was at this Pharisee's house, and I don't know why she felt this gratitude. But something has happened in her life. She witnessed something. She knew about something. Maybe one of her friends was caught in the act of adultery and was dragged before Jesus. I don't know. But there was something in her life that had already changed her life so that she felt an incredible amount of gratitude toward Jesus. I wish I knew. I wish I knew why she was pushed to do this and to potentially humiliate herself in front of all of these respectable, fine people and to go in this man's house. But she did it because she saw an opportunity to express her love. And we ask, why did she take advantage of that opportunity? Why did she push herself into this situation? Why did she so desperately want to show Jesus how much she loved him? Because she felt a sense of gratitude. Well, why did she feel a sense of gratitude? Because in some way she felt a sense of doubt, a sense of debt. I'm already on tonight's sermon on doubt. But she felt a sense of indebtedness to Jesus for some reason. I don't know the details of why. But here's a question I want you to think about. Do you owe someone who has forgiven you a debt? Do you owe someone? I have a little pet philosophy about, and if you have Russian heritage in here, then I guess I'll apologize to you, but I say this very same thing when I'm in Russia. Russians have a hard time saying thank you. They do. I'll stand behind it because I've been working in Russia for about 14 years, going back and forth every year, and dealt with lots and lots of Russians, and they really, really have a hard time saying thank you about anything. And I've talked to numbers of men and women about why, and they just say, well, it's cultural. I said, no, that's not good enough. That's not good enough. And I don't mean to paint everybody with the same brush, but I guess I am in a way. And I've done a lot of thinking about why is that the case. And I think it's because they don't want to acknowledge a debt. If you are grateful and you express that gratitude, then you are acknowledging that you owe somebody something. And I think there has been some things in their society that they desperately do not want to owe anybody anything. And I think there's some practical reasons why that's true, but that we can leave that for another discussion time. Jesus asked a second question in verse 44. He said, Simon, do you see this woman? And you know what the answer is? No. He didn't see the same woman, at least. He didn't see the same woman that Jesus did he? That's really an interesting question. Simon, do you see this woman? I don't think he did it just to set up what he was about to say. I think that is a very pregnant question, full of meaning. Do you see this woman? And he didn't see the woman that Jesus saw. He saw a worthless tramp. He saw a woman who was a pathetic embarrassment. He saw a vile woman that he wanted out of his house. And now Jesus is going to give you an insight into God's heart right here. You've heard it said by them of old, the way to a man's heart is what? Through his stomach, right? Well, there's some truth there, isn't there? But if you want to know how to get into God's heart, he gives you an insight right here. There are three things that touch Jesus about this woman: her tears, her humility, and her sacrifice. Her tears, God's touched by tears. Remember, just not very long ago, we had a lesson about the lad who was thrown under the bush out in the desert, and he was crying, and God heard him crying. God's heart is touched by tears. God's heart is touched by gratitude that this woman was showing, and by sacrifice, the alabaster perfume. Okay, it's test time. The lesson's over. It's test time. What was it that Jesus wanted to tell Simon when he said, Simon, I have something to tell you? What was it? I'm going to give you a little silent period here because I want you to phrase in your mind what you think it was. He said, Simon, I've got something to tell you. He told him this story about the debtor. He was the woman here. What was it that he wanted to tell Simon that rocked Simon's world? Got it? Now yours is as good as mine, okay? But I think what he wanted to tell him was, you cannot love God deeply until you acknowledge your sinfulness. I think that's what he wanted to tell him. This man didn't feel any need for forgiveness. He wasn't impressed by forgiveness. It wasn't part and parcel of his life. But you can't love God deeply without that foundation. The very foundation of your relationship with God starts with the acknowledgement of your sinfulness and mine. And as a result of that, there is a deep sense of debt that we have when we see the cross and we understand the message behind the cross. I have something to tell you. Heaven's inhabitants won't be the good people. It's going to be the sinners, the vile, the wretched, the sinful, the ones that have really messed up our lives. And the people who love God the most are the ones who realize our deep sinfulness and the debt that we have to God, because He opens His arms up and He says, "Whosoever will may come." And because when that other vile woman was brought before Him, He didn't even condemn her. I'd like to know what her story was after that. I'd like to know what this woman's story was after that. But I have this suspicion that you're going to be able to meet these women one day. And you'll get to hear the rest of the story. This woman's life was ready to be changed, and Jesus' response certainly changed her life. Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Shalom. I love this story, and I just keep being drawn back to it, I think because of the hope that it gives to sinners and misfits. And that's what I am. I'm both of those, all of the above and much more. And there have been times in my life when I've not made God very proud, to say the very least. In Matthew 9:13, He says, "For I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." Sit down. I've got something to tell you about who's going to be in heaven. It's going to be the sinners. And if you are not one, then you don't need what God has to offer. The cross really doesn't have very much meaning, and you don't feel very deeply a love for God. Not really. But if you recognize that you're a sinner and without God and without hope in this world, and you see God standing with arms open and His Son with His arms stretched wide, nailed to a cross, and He says, "Because I love you," then you'll take whatever risk you need to show Him how much gratitude you have and how much you love Him. And He gives us that opportunity this morning. If you're not a Christian, I don't know how it makes you feel to think about coming down in front of a group of people and being immersed in water. You know, that's not the most dignified thing in the world, is it? Is it too much indignity to ask? How much debt do you feel to God? How much love do you have for God? And if, as a child of His, have you ever been embarrassed to name His name? Have you ever been embarrassed to stand up and be counted for Christ whenever others weren't being? He gives us that opportunity every day of our lives, and particularly today while we stand and sing.